Casey, it's our first long distance podcast.
Wow.
We're now in each other's ears.
That's pretty crazy.
So I've been a little busy. I'm in Orlando, and we've been directing Thrones, the musical parody. If you guys are in Orlando in the next month, please come see it. But I did not get to see the game the other night.
Let me tell you, it was nuts. It was nuts.
Yeah, I need you to give me the whole rundown.
Okay, so it was close all game. Right? It was tense. It was tough. It was so hard because watching Philadelphia try to run their offense against the Celtics, who were just so hungry for every ball, whether it was loose or being dribbled at any time, it had been a long time since I've really felt that intensity from a team that I've been watching. Because, you know, you feel intensity in the playoffs and you feel defensive intensity. But to feel the way that these Sixers were literally suffocating, or sorry, the way the Celtics were literally suffocating the Sixers on offense, it was nuts. And then to see the Sixers still be able to do things was really incredible. I mean, Saric had an amazing game. He was a bully in the post. He was a bully on rebounds. He was good from behind the three-point line. Ben Simmons had a weird game.
He had a weird series.
He had a very weird series. They played him really well, which was basically just like, put a tall guy on him and don't stay anywhere close to him because he's not shooting anywhere outside the paint. Mm-hmm. And that played out. But he was still able to do things like, make people think that he was going to pass it. And then they just left the entire area under the basket open, and he would pivot and drive and dunk. I saw a couple of those plays that were like, that was a breakdown, but it wasn't actually a breakdown of Boston's defense. It was a good counter to what they were doing, which was like saying, Ben Simmons, you can't beat a tall guy in front of you. You have to figure out something to do. And yeah, it was great. And there were so many back and forths in the fourth quarter. There was a Celtics run to come back and be up by six. And then there was a Sixers run. And then there was a run to make it tied. And it was, the game was awesome. I mean, it really encapsulates everything that's been good about the Eastern playoffs so far.
Well, I was going to ask, how excited are you for the future of like the next 5 years of Eastern Conference finals?
I'm very excited because I think that there will be two of these four people in them at any time. Giannis, LeBron, the Celtics, all of them, and Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. I think that those four teams are the way that the East is going to go. Because I don't think the Wizards are there.
Wait, what about Kyrie and Gordon?
I mean, yeah, the Celtics. The Celtics as a whole. If Kyrie's around, which people are saying, hey, let's trade Kyrie. I think let's everybody pump the brakes a little.
Oh, let's pump the brakes. Let's pump all the brakes possible to be pumped. What is, not relevant to the Eastern Conference, what's Anthony Davis's contract situation?
I believe he's got a number of years left on his Supermax.
Why are there
contract?
So many AD trade rumors going around? I don't get that.
Because people are dumb. And trade rumors are something that big market teams do because they think they are better than all the small market teams.
I just feel like, on what planet do you think the Hornets, or the Pelicans rather, are trading AD at this point? There's all these like Celtics AD proposals.
Right. The only reason you trade him is if he says, I don't ever want to play here again, and you need to find a way to get rid of me. Yeah. And you can tell him to shove rocks, right? Because you have him under contract. But the way that the league is, you're going to want to try to find some value for that before it becomes untenable.
But he has more than 1 year left. So it's not like I mean, that's the thing that people do when they're in their last year.
Yeah.
And making the teams. By the way, I'm beginning to suspect that you have some kind of rock farm somewhere, because most of your derisive insults to people have to do with either shoving or kicking rocks. And I feel like you want these guys to like work on your coal mining operation or something.
I will say this. I do not have a rock farm, but I am a big fan of The Rock. both Dwayne The Rock Johnson and The Rock
and the film. Movie. The excellent film.
Truly a fantastic Sean Connery, Nicolas Cage action showcase.
I think that to me is the peak of the Michael Bay experience.
Ooh, ooh, even yeah. better than, what is it, Pain and Gain?
I have not seen Pain and Gain. wait, back to the Eastern Conference. Yeah. It's actually becoming increasingly interesting where LeBron is going to go.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think last time I said that he's going to go to the Sixers.
Yes.
Mostly, and it's more that I just can't find, I can't figure out what's a good home for him at this point. Because, I mean, really, he probably, if Cleveland didn't suck so much, he should probably just stay in Cleveland.
Yeah.
Because he can't go to the Celtics.
Yeah, if Cleveland didn't suck so much, you know, if they were just like a team that made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, then sure. But like, here's the thing. I get what you mean. Like, it's so ridiculous to say that Cleveland sucks because they're in the conference finals. They don't suck. Yeah. But by God, the reason they don't suck is because LeBron is so good.
Oh, yeah. Although I do think my theory from last episode is holding up, which is, for them to make it far in these playoffs, they have to get more performance from the other players.
Yeah.
Sort of undermining the case that they're so terrible. You know, like, yes. So you can't say if Kevin Love raises his game back up to near all-star levels that he's horrible. You know what I mean? Like, if he continues to be horrible, if they beat the Celtics and, like I said last time, no one else scores more than 20 points a game,
yeah,
then I think you can say LeBron has dragged them to the finals. But the idea that he has dragged a horrible team to the finals and then they all also happen to raise their game in this conference finals sort of contradict each other.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, even bad Kevin Love is still a good player. That is true. But like Kevin Love, when he's not playing well, is still a good player. The other players on the team, when they're not playing well, are bad players. But Kevin Love is good. And
I think when Korver is playing well, he is a very, very effective weapon.
Oh, huge.
With LeBron. So I don't I think he sort of rises out of bad player level. J.R. Smith, Jeff Green. I don't know. You know, Larry Nance can get up out, you know.
I will always love Larry Nance. And when he's a good player, disrupting, rebounding, and playing good springy defense on players that are smaller and bigger than him, I'm a fan. But, you know, there are times when he disappears as well. You know, because he's young.
There might be a Larry Nance, Marcus Smart scuffle, maybe.
Ooh, I'd watch that.
That series starts on Sunday?
Saturday? I believe it's Sunday.
I hate these. I don't like these gaps. I think both of these series should have started tonight and tomorrow,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely.
Why are we waiting?
I mean, we're waiting so that we can fire Dwayne Casey. You know, there's so much stuff that's got to go on around the league.
Yeah, I still think blow up Toronto.
Yes. So you're saying blow up the coach because he's already blown up. Blow up the players because they're already blown up. What else in the Toronto Raptors organization should we blow up? Should we change rapper affiliations? Does Drake have to go?
No, but are we blowing up Masai?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like he's only done good things everywhere he's gone. Yeah. And if you lose him, he's going to go turn the Orlando Magic into an amazing team or something, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what to do. I think obviously the easiest thing is to fire Casey because, you know, all the coaches' contracts are just it's easy to get out of them. I mean, you probably still have to pay him whatever he's owed, but
you just have to throw more money somewhere else.
Right. But, you know, they can't, like, DeMar and Kyle Lowry's contracts are pretty extensive still.
Yep.
But I don't know. I mean, you never know because if LeBron goes somewhere else, it changes the tenor of things and maybe they have another shot. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would be so depressed if I was a Raptors fan at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're depressed if you're a fan of anybody who's not LeBron in the East for the last 7 years, right?
I don't think you'd be depressed if you're a Celtics fan. Because this is all house money at this point.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I guess, over time, you're depressed as a Celtics.
Yeah.
This year, you still have hope because you are still alive. But, you know, contrary to who I might pick in this series, seeing that snuffed out would be a backbreaker, I think, for a lot of people.
For the Celtics, I think that they didn't really think they were going far this year anyway.
Yeah.
So, I think if you're a Pacers fan, you're probably encouraged.
Yeah.
I think if you're a Raptors fan, you're suicidal. I think if you're a Wizards fan, you're probably depressed.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, that's general Wizards fandom is just, hey, it's the Wizards again. We did it. We are still the Wizards.
I think if you're a Bucks fan, you're fine. Okay. I mean, you can't be too depressed when you have Giannis.
No, no. And just an eternal sunshine well of smiles, joy, and wonder.
Yeah. I think I guess what I maybe overestimated was I thought the Raptors team defense was better than it was.
Yeah, they really shit the bed on defense. Yeah. And it, you know, I mean, you really can't, you can't take anything away from that series other than they're fucking dead. They're dead.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about the Raptors.
it's so sad. And I, you know, I'm a guy who believed in the Raptors, wanted to
you
believe.
You really
this
did.
This was the year. I, at the beginning of our podcast, for those who are joining us in the middle, was big on Toronto winning their first NBA Finals championship this year.
Yeah. Oh, you wait. Did you pick them to go all the way?
I mean, we didn't do all of our picks. We're doing them round by round. But you know, if you had pushed me, that would have been my squad. I would have rode with.
Well, I think to believe in the Raptors this year, Raptors is to believe in, you know, any human being's ability to improve themselves without, changing personnel. So any ability to like revive a marriage without a divorce, mm-hmm. or to make a job situation better without quitting that job and finding a new one, you know, the belief that we can change our lives without necessarily changing our situation, I think that's what the Raptors embodied this year. And clearly that's wrong, and we need to all get divorced and quit our jobs.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's exactly what we should do.
That's what I take away from basketball. I was thinking while watching the Warriors finish up the series against the Pelicans the other night.
Yeah.
You know, I would say right now, I hate the fact that Reddit NBA is so influential in terms of like general hot take atmosphere, because it really is like, you know, things get featured on Reddit and then you hear things coming out of the mouths of like Stephen A. Smith and whatever, like, or getting featured on ESPN or things like that.
Got it.
And I was thinking about how, you know, LeBron right now is we've established that I'm one of the LeBron haters.
Yes.
But that there's still a steady stream of Golden State hate. And even among like writers or all the guys on The Ringer or whoever, everybody's like so bored with, everybody's so mad that they're so good.
Yeah.
And, you know, last year, the whole thing, like, why are we even playing the playoffs? And this year, as they're starting to get into form, there's a little bit of that creeping back in. Like, why are we even bothering? Like, look at them. They're clearly back.
It's familiar.
And I think that is no different than LeBron haterism, except that it's focused at a team. Because I would say there is almost nothing wrong with the way the Warriors play basketball. Like, there's what are you hating on when you watch them play?
Yeah, I mean, I know as my character Warriors hater that I hate having fun. Like,
yeah.
I go to work and I expect people to, you know, just do the same thing over and over again in a way that is bad and not fun. Like, I listen, when I make a report for my bosses, I tell them, okay, all right, this report is going to make you sad. And you need to enjoy that. You need to enjoy the sadness, enjoy everything that's bad, right? If something's good, it can't exist for a long period of time. It has to be fleeting. It has to be sad and bad. So I think that it's important to have that viewpoint.
Because I would say if you don't like, let's say you hate the Warriors and the way they play, which is mind-boggling to me. I feel like if you hate the way they play, then you just hate basketball. Let's say you hate them. Then your options left in these playoffs are you can love the way the Rockets play basketball, which can be exhilarating sometimes. You can love the way the Celtics play basketball, which is pretty scrappy.
That's who these people would root for, I think. I think that they would root for the Celtics because the Celtics play basketball right now, at least, like they're trying to punch you in the face. And that's what these people want. They want punch-face basketball.
I think people also root for the LeBron solo heroics as well. And so, I mean, I feel if that's the menu of options left, that, like, I admire the Celtics, the way they're scrapping along, but I also just have limited belief in their ability to get to the next round.
That's fair. So. I do want to check in about, so, Rachel Nichols was talking about the Celtics and how everybody's bringing up this, like, well, they have nobody. They're a bunch of young scrappers. They're nothing. Yeah. Which, that narrative is a little false, I think.
They have Horford.
I mean, they've got Horford, who's a top three pick. They've got Jaylen Brown, top three pick. They've got talent. They've got Jason Tatum, top three pick. You know, they've got, you know, Marcus Smart, who was just out of the lottery or just at the tail end of the lottery. They've got Terry Rozier, same deal. You know, these players are not players that would never pan out, right?
Yeah.
They're players with talent who've been big-time players in their, you know, at their previous positions in life.
I would agree with that. I'm, and I believe in Brad Stevens too.
Yeah, I think the thing that we're all saying when we say that they're young and they're scrappy is that they don't have the experience in the NBA to do this, except for like Horford, who has a ton of experience, right? And it's an interesting thing to watch people say, okay, well, we don't know these guys; they haven't proven themselves yet, but they're literally proving themselves as they play. Which is a very fun phenomenon and a cool thing to like watch and be a part of.
Yeah, I almost feel like, you know, so I almost feel like the Raptors have killed the belief in people to like it's almost like the Raptors have killed like a little bit of like prisoner of the moment recency bias.
Yeah.
Because going into that series, you're like, man, they're rolling. They're doing well. And so like we've seen the Celtics play well and there's just a feeling of like, nah, they'll revert one. Like, or like once they go up against the LeBron buzzsaw.
Yeah.
Like I think some of that is residual like disillusionment from the Raptors series.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Because I think if the Celtics were facing the Cavaliers right after the Cavaliers went to seven games with the Pacers, I think you'd have the opposite. I would certainly have the feeling of like, you know what? They just went through a young scrappy team that took them to seven games. Now they're facing a better coached scrappy team. This model's going to apply again, you know? So they're going to get the same thing I felt about the Pacers, which was on defense. They just seemed to have energy for days.
Yeah.
I think that they're going to, you know, have that against the Celtics too.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that the Celtics will be similar to the Pacers in that they won't be scared of LeBron, which I don't think they will be.
No, I don't think that they're scared of anybody. Do they have what it takes to take them down? I'm giving away my pick here, but I say yes.
Ooh, how many games?
I say absolutely seven games.
So I think that there is a possibility of the Pacers and the Celtics being young enough teams that they don't know any better to be scared of LeBron. I do think there's a psychological element of Wizards and Raptors getting beat down by LeBron's that were honestly more complete, better overall player like versions of LeBron that then took up residence in their psychic, you know, vulnerabilities.
They've got this idea of the LeBron as this giant killer, and then now he's just a killer. Is what you're hypothesizing?
Well, my hypothesis is that they were there's an intimidation factor that worked against the Raptors that does probably not exist with the Pacers or the Celtics.
I mean, all you got to do is hope that old man Al Horford isn't telling ghost stories in the locker room to all those young kids at the campfire.
It kind of feels like Tatum and Marcus Smart particularly don't give a shit about any of that.
Did you see the tweet from Tatum?
No, I didn't.
It's so funny. It's like from 7 years ago, and he tweets
at LeBron. Oh, where he was begging him to like be.
Hey, man, I'm Larry Hughes' cousin. I'm like this guy's cousin, this guy's son. Give me a follow back, and it's got a picture of him at like what's got to be like 7 or 7 to 10 years old, like hanging out with LeBron, and LeBron's got these sunglasses on. He's looking all cool. It's so fun to think about how, you know, the young guys who are coming up in the NBA now are the people who idolized LeBron as he was becoming a superstar in today's NBA. And now Jason Tatum is going to have to guard LeBron in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, what a cool thing to have in your life.
You know what? It's like when we get to do stuff with our comedy heroes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you doing this podcast with me, Casey.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Okay, I got a pick for you.
Okay.
Celtics in six.
Ooh, so we were both taking LeBron hate to a new level.
Well, this is what I still believe that a team with more energy...
Okay.
And more dive on the floor-ish springiness and all that stuff. Again, I still feel like on the Cavs, the only springy player is Nance and arguably on offense, Clarkson. But like just
what about
that
Seti Osman?
Yeah, yeah, sure. But that thing where the Pacers just like kept getting to they didn't always have the finesse for a particular moment.
Yeah.
But they were just recovering on defense and getting to passing lanes and stuff in a way that made me think that the randomness of a basketball series is going to break their way. And I feel like it almost did. And I feel like the Pacers have less talent than the Celtics.
Yeah.
And I think that the Celtics have a better defensive system.
Yes. One thing I read about the one of the reasons the Pacers' defensive system was a bit tougher for the Cavaliers is because they don't really do switching. And the switching that happens in a lot of modern defenses isn't the Pacers style. They try to fight through everything. And apparently that was something that the Cavs really struggled with. And the Raptors do a lot of switching, and they just completely took advantage of those switches. And I think that it'll be interesting to see what kind of defense Brad Stevens will kind of change what he's been doing to adapt for the Cavaliers. And I think it's going to be a lot of challenging LeBron to do what he can do and then trying to make anybody else make a play. Like that to me seems like the way that they're going to do it. But I don't know. And I'm very excited to see.
I think that's very possible because honestly, you can let LeBron get 50. I mean, not let him, but you know, like the rest of the Cavaliers don't seem that hard for a modern NBA defense to keep from being able to create.
Yeah. I mean, you saw how, you know, I don't know if you saw this, but they blanketed JJ Redick in this series. And I think they're going to try to do the same thing to Kyle Korver. And
yeah,
it's tougher, I think, because JJ is the best three-point threat on that Sixers team. And on the Cavs, he'll run actions with Kevin Love with, you know, just running around the outside of the room. But Kevin Love, J.R. Smith, and LeBron James are all better three-point options than the other three-point options that they have on the Sixers. Mm-hmm. So I think that they'll try their best to blanket him, but it might lead to the ability for Kevin Love to make some really, you know, to make some plays where he would need to. And if he steps up, that could be a tough thing for the Celtics to deal with.
I still think the Celtics are going to win.
Me too.
Yeah.
And our here's the thing. Are we picking this because it's what we believe or because it's what we want? Or is it a combo of both?
It's a combo of both. Because I guess the thing is that I obviously don't want the Cavaliers to win. But I also don't really see much in them yet. I don't know what to make of the Raptors series. I feel like it doesn't tell us anything about them at all.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Before we start talking about the Western Conference, I want to play a quick game.
Oh, sure.
Okay. We're not in the same room. All right. And we're not doing video chat. We're just doing audio chat. So I want to play a game with you. It's called What Jersey Am I Wearing?
Ooh.
Okay. What?
Am I just straight up guessing, or
I'm gonna give you some clues first.
Okay, cool.
This jersey is for a player who currently plays with a team that made the playoffs this year.
Okay,
but he has a different number now than he did when this jersey was made.
Oh, Okay. Okay, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Are the two numbers for the same team?
Yes, they're for the same team.
Ooh. And they made the playoffs this year.
They did make the playoffs this year. I know that really cuts it down to just over half the teams in the NBA.
Just it cuts it down to 16 teams. Yeah. I'm going to the problem is I don't remember. Okay, let me think of who has changed numbers. My first instinct is to say Dwayne Wade.
Okay, all right. Hey, that's a really, really good instinct. Dwayne Wade is incorrect, but I will give you this.
Because I feel like you're back in the right.
He did go back. He went back. This player is also in the Eastern Conference and not on the Heat.
So Dwayne Wade went back and he got his old number back, I think.
Yes, he did.
Okay. So this guy's in the Eastern Conference.
Yes.
He went back to a team he had played for before.
Yes.
So let's see who we have left. We have the Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. We've got the. I'm trying to think if anyone went back on the Pacers. The Raptors. Celtics. Okay. Heat. Jeez.
Yeah.
My second guess is John Henson.
Ooh, that is a very, very good guess. But John Henson never left the Bucks. He's always been on the Bucks.
I feel like he left my consciousness.
You are correct about what team I am wearing. I am wearing a Milwaukee Bucks jersey.
Oh, weird.
Okay.
So it can't be Giannis.
It's not Giannis.
It can't be. I can't imagine you would wear an Eric Bledsoe.
Like no, and he's only been with the team for this year.
That's what I thought. I mean, but I also think even if everything else fit.
Here's your next clue.
Okay.
All right. This player once scored 55 points in a game. In his rookie year.
Michael Redd?
No. Yeah. Close.
Is it Chris Middleton?
It is not Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton has never left the Bucks.
Okay.
Here's the thing. He didn't play a ton in the playoffs because he's a backup, but he was signed towards the end of the season to provide veteran leadership and point guard backup from the bench.
I think I remember watching a Bucks game and going like, who's that on the bench there?
Who's that on the bench? Other teams he's played for are the Detroit Pistons.
Uh-huh.
He played in China.
Uh-huh.
And he also played in Washington on the Wizards.
Damn it. I need their initials.
B and J.
B.J. Armstrong.
Yes, B.J. Armstrong. All right. Are you giving up?
Oh, let me see. B.J. Give me the less obvious of those two names.
Brandon.
Brandon Jennings?
Brandon Jennings.
Oh my God!
Yes,
I didn't even know he was back on that team.
Yes, yeah, that's the fun part is that my jersey that I bought 5 or 6 years ago of a horrible Christmas alternate for the Milwaukee Bucks is back in style again because he's back on the team.
Wow! And you have a jersey from when he was there the first time around.
That is correct.
Wow, I do remember like him being a crazy scorer.
Crazy scorer.
Yeah. He was one of those guys, I think, that I think had good numbers at the combine. I remember every year I used to look at who had like the best, just raw, physical stats of like, you know, quick, shuttle drill and all that kind of stuff. I remember one year the best, like the quickest person in the entire draft was Johnny Flynn.
That was Steph Curry's year.
And then, like, he didn't turn into much.
No, he did not. He and Ricky Rubio, back-to-back point guards in the draft.
Oh.
Con!
What a horrible pick.
Yeah.
That to me was just like, so you guys don't know what you want, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have the ability to tell the difference between these two players, which one you think is better for your team. So you're just taking both of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was very strange. Let's go to the Western Conference.
All right, let's do it.
I'll give you my pick. Warriors in 5.
Wow.
That's a combo of what I want to happen and what I think will happen.
All right, I'm Warriors in 6.
By the way, I nailed Warriors in 5 over the Pelicans.
You certainly did.
At a time that I think lots of people were picking 6 or 7 games for them.
Yes, I believe I did as well.
And this is my thinking for this upcoming series. So before we watched the last series, I had been influenced by this Coach Nick video about the three-point shooting that the two teams had and how just there was no way that the Pelicans could keep up. Mm-hmm. The Warriors, interestingly, have a pretty low three-point percentage in the playoffs so far.
I think that bodes very well for their future because I think they're going to regress to their incredibly high mean.
Yeah, well, what's amazing is the reason their percentage is low is because of Klay and Durant. Like, Klay has had some bad three-point shooting games.
Yeah, the first two games of the Pelican series, he was just awful.
Yeah, and Durant has had some, like, 1-for-8 games as well.
Yeah, and he makes up for it by getting to the line and also being money from inside the arc.
Yeah, so they have a pretty low three-point shooting percentage. However, the two teams that the Rockets have played this year in the playoffs, both shot like between 15 and 25 points better than they did in the regular season from the So like their three-point defense, which actually was pretty good in the regular season, like both the Minnesota and Utah, their three-point percentages went up in those two series. So that doesn't bode well for facing the Warriors. Golden State held the Spurs and the Pelicans below their regular season three-point shooting percentages.
Okay.
So that is the sole stat that I'm basing my entire case on, because it's all just guesswork.
Yeah. Yes, of course. So you think that the Rockets are going to continue their poor three-point defense, and that is going to lead the Warriors to start shooting better from three. And you don't think that it's going to be the thing where it's going to go on the other side, where the Warriors are going to stop or continue to shoot poorly from three.
I think that there is going to be some natural regression anyway for the Warriors.
Yeah.
Because probably Klay and Kevin were shooting a higher proportion of three-pointers than they would have wanted to in the five games before Curry came back.
Oh, yeah.
And so in the game since he's come back, they've shot a little better, but more that he's taken a more than zero number of three-point shots. So, and he's better at them than they are. So it's like, it's better for him to shoot a three-pointer than even Klay or Durant for the most part. So like their percentage is going to go up just because it's going to be, Klay won't be hunting for three-pointers as much as he had to when Curry was out.
Yeah. How do you feel about how the Warriors have iceboxed Zaza Pachulia and basically most of their center rotation in the playoffs?
I'm fine with it. I'm particularly fine with it because, like, honestly, Zaza doesn't seem that bothered by it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's bothered. I think he's a professional. He'll be fine. It's so interesting to me for them to have played an entire season as one team and then to be this other team.
Well, that's the other reason why I think they're going to win, is because I think that they can win at a variety of different paces. The pace against the Spurs was slower. And then, especially in the beginning of the Pelicans series, the Pelicans just wanted to run. And they were just like, cool, we can do that too. So I feel like in a playoff series where there's adjustments every game, often a team wins when they can grind out, you know, a 95-point win and also then win 125 to 117 or something like that. And I have less belief in the Rockets to do that. I also have less belief in D'Antoni to do that.
That makes sense.
They have this other defensive coordinator now, so he maybe, I don't know his name, maybe he can figure out something to do against, you know, the Hamptons 5. But I just also feel like, for the most part, if you think that Harden and Durant can sort of like equal each other out, which I think is probably right. I mean, Harden might end up throwing up like a 50-point game or something like that. I would give Curry the advantage over Chris Paul.
Okay.
But let's say they neutralize each other.
Is that solely because of the backbreaking crossovers that Curry has been known to kill Chris Paul with?
No, I mean, yes, but I also just think, Curry's better.
Yeah, like, yes.
And for as vaunted as Chris Paul's defense is, like, it doesn't really, like, one-on-one defense doesn't matter that much against the Warriors.
Yeah, and Curry, when you play good one-on-one defense against him, he can still score. That's the thing that's so tough about him, is that the defensive options against him are ineffective, limited, and bad.
Yeah, or you distort your defense past the point where, like, so maybe you're going to take a step past the three-point line, and he takes three fewer three-pointers from that insane no man's land where he tends to shoot from sometimes.
Yeah.
But then you're spaced out in a way that's, like, not good if you have Draymond near the free throw line getting one pass and then able to distribute the next step. Now, maybe the Rockets can, like, neutralize that. But, like, I also think that, like, if you say Harden and Durant cancel each other out, and let's say you say Chris Paul and Steph Curry cancel each other out, then who cancels out Draymond and Clay? Just those two guys.
Like, I think Clint Capella is really good, especially in the system that they have.
Yeah.
I think that their wing combo, three-headed monster of Tucker, Ariza, and Luke Richard and Mbah-Abute is the answer that they have to come with. Like, they don't have anything else to come with. Like, Gerald Green is not an answer for Klay Thompson. He's a shadow, a mirage of Klay Thompson.
Yeah. I think
in such a way where, like, he's only on offense and his defense is not good.
I think Capella and Draymond won't cancel each other out, in the sense that Capella will have some great rim runs and it will fulfill his role probably really effectively.
And Capella's a good defender and a good rebounder. And, you know, a lot of times those two are lumped together, but there's separate skills that you need to have to be a good rebounder and to be a good defender.
Yeah. I would just say that they already made it through series against LaMarcus and AD.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think Capella's going to make a dent against them.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's not the role he's trying to play. He's not trying to be the I'm going to make a dent on offense guy. He's gonna finish plays on offense. That's his deal. But he's also going to be a force on the defensive glass. And I think he's going to try to be a force on the offensive glass, too. Because I think that the Warriors rebounding is a strength of theirs, because, you know, everybody except for Curry, and even Curry's not the worst rebounder.
I mean, he can block out Dwight Howard.
yeah
he can block out Dwight Howard with one arm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's an accomplishment in I don't want to have to talk about Dwight Howard.
Man. Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's horrible.
I don't want to be depressed. That's a sad thing.
So the question, I guess, is, so I think D'Antoni is a more brittle coach than Steve Kerr is in terms of philosophy.
Especially,
so
I think that mustache. You know, a whole year with no mustache has been a very tough thing to watch.
Disconcerting. I think that works against him. I think that the question is, do you think that Houston's hunger to get to the finals is enough to outweigh the Warriors, like, hey, now this is the fun time of the season now feeling?
Yes, I do. I think that there is a chance that the Rockets are hungry enough to push past whatever malaise that we're portraying upon the Warriors. Here's the thing. I don't think the Warriors have malaise and boredom. I think that that's, you know, as you were saying, a lot of people who watch them are bored because they've been here before and they've done it, and we want something new. I think that everybody... one of my big things is I don't think that... it doesn't feel to me like I can project upon any of these professional athletes that they are bored or feel like, well, I don't really care that much. Even the Raptors, who got smoked the fuck out of their building, I don't think that I can project that onto them. I think that they got whooped by a team that was more prepared and executed better. But which is an
insane thing to say about a Ty Lue coach team. The thing is, what I was saying was, I don't think the Warriors will have any of that malaise in this series. I actually do think that they have been bored, but I don't think that means they play bored. I think when you see the Warriors bored in the regular season, what it means is that they play sort of like less focused. Their turnovers go up. They try more bullshit because their version of bored is they fuck around like it's a pickup game.
Yeah, let's have some fun.
Yeah. They're never bored like, oh, I don't want to be here.
Yeah.
Their boredom is different. And like, I don't think the Raptors are ever bored. I think that there's versions of resignation that happens to these guys when a lot of it's like, suppressed pride and anger about what's happening. But so I don't know. I don't think the Warriors are going to be bored in this series. I'm saying that now the thing I was thinking at the beginning of the playoffs where it's like, I think they're back, but they're sort of slowly waking up, which they still had games against the Spurs and the Pelicans where it was just like, okay, we're not quite as focused as we want to be. I think they're going to be completely focused in this series. So do you think that is equal to the Rockets' hunger?
I mean, yes. I think that their focus is going to be there. I think they'll be focused. I think that the Rockets' hunger is significant. I mean, you know, you look at Chris Paul, who wants it so bad, who just wants it so bad.
The thing is also, though, is I think the hunger that the Rockets have is probably good for Harden. I don't think there's any evidence to show that hunger is something that has worked for Chris Paul.
I mean, only very recently in game 5 of that series when he just absolutely shut the whole Jazz down completely.
Yeah.
Like, that game was amazing. Game 5, he played fantastically. I mean, even a Chris Paul hater like me or you has to give it up to him. But I think the Warriors will feel that competitive spirit, because I think the thing that I do want to say is I think this is going to get chippy. I think these are two teams
that
don't like each other. And I think that that's going to come through because this year the Warriors did not dominate the Rockets in the regular season. And they're going to Houston to start this series.
Well,
I think it's going to get chippy. I think the Warriors are going to feel disrespected. I think Houston's going to feel disrespected. I think that there's a lot of pride on the line that both of these teams are going to want to really examine.
This is why I think the Warriors are going to win in 5, because I think it works extremely against the Rockets to have I know it's great to have home court advantage, but to be the team that hosts the first game, two games, in when you're playing a team that's arguably better than you.
Okay.
I don't think it works for them at all, because I will be shocked if they win the first two games at home.
So that's one of the reasons that makes them, the Warriors, kind of changing up their rotation and starting lineup and everything so interesting, is that the team that the Warriors were in the regular season was not better than the Rockets. Like, by advanced metrics, by record, by whatever you're thinking of, they were not a better team. However, the Hamptons 5, shout out to Tim Kawakami from The Athletic for his coining of the phrase. Mm-hmm. The Hamptons 5, I think, as a team, in many ways, we're going to say is better than the Rockets, right? This new look Warriors team that comes around to the playoffs, like, that's a better team. So, yeah, they have that pressure of oh, my God, we're the number one seed. We have to live up to this. If they lose one of those first two games, you're saying that it's all going to go haywire and that the Warriors close out.
I think the Warriors are going to win. I think they're going to win one of the first two, and they're going to hold court at home, and they're going to close it out in game 5. That's what I think is going to happen. The other thing that might seriously happen is they steal game 1 and then they like solidly win game 2 and like give up a game. Like, it's not crazy.
So they pull a Cavs versus the Raptors.
I mean, yeah, it's not crazy to think that they win two games in Houston.
No, I mean, it's not, and I don't feel like, and I may be wrong about this, I don't feel like Houston is a particularly hostile place to play.
No, it's not.
Especially it's, because it's, there's so many Warriors fans in Houston. I don't think that it's going to be like, we're going to cheer for every Warriors player. Like, people love their Rockets, and people are
people love
to
the Rockets.
Them.
I will say that Houston is still a football town. I'm from Houston originally, which is why people are so mad that I don't root for them. Except, you know what? I would root for the Rockets if they just stop acquiring players I despise.
Yeah.
that's all there is to
it. If all the Warriors were on the Rockets, you would definitely root for the Rockets.
Oh, I definitely would. If the rosters were switched,
yeah,
yes, absolutely. If the rosters were switched,
the jersey you wear doesn't matter, man. We're in a post basketball world. Free Darko, let me know.
If the rosters were switched, then I would see this as a wonderful moment to destroy Maury Ball and like advanced data bullshit.
That's amazing.
Because I will say that, like, Daryl Morey, who I actually do like as a personality, and I like his, I like a lot of his philosophies, and I like the fact that he plays ping pong,
table tennis, baby.
But I do think that he has gotten a lot of credit as being this like pioneer of the game without a ton of results. And he is the person that thought they could make, I'm sorry to mention it, Dwight Howard work. And
he is one of many people who thought they could make Dwight Howard work.
Right, but when Daryl Morey did it, it was like, oh, well, I guess he's run some numbers in his little magic box that makes it clear why he's getting Dwight Howard. Because all of the anecdotal eye test things seem to say that he's a cancer, and like interviews with Steve Nash seem to indicate that like he's not a great team player. So there must be some Morey Ball happening where they're going to magically make it work, and it didn't.
Maybe all that he saw from that Lakers season was the Sports Illustrated cover. Now this is going to be fun.
Yeah, that's actually Morey Ball. It's just
now this is going to be fun.
Yeah. So I think that I don't know. I
know you don't believe in the Rockets, and I think that's clear. I think that they're better than you're going to give them credit for, and I think that they'll pull. I actually think they're going to win the first two games in the series and then get reverse swept. That's how I see it going.
Ooh, interesting.
So I don't know. I think they'll come out and win those first two games.
I will say that Harden gets about two or three fewer free throws per game in the playoffs than he does in the regular season.
Yeah.
Which works against him, obviously. And I think, you know what? I should look up how many free throws he gets per drive. You know, I would say about 3 years ago, I ran some data on Harden where not only was he getting the most free throws, you know, at his position, or in the league, he was also getting a disproportionately high number of free throws per drive. So Whoa. it was like you could say, a common defense is like, well, he drives the lane and forces the issue. And there were other players driving to the basket at similar rates as him that were not getting the same free throw calls. And this is a couple years ago. So it must have been the only person comparable to him was Corey Maggette.
Maggette,
I think I had run it historically.
He'll make some free throws.
Corey Maggette was the only person who had a season where he had like he just dominated at the free throw line. Like he was just generating fouls, which you can see in like the physical way that Corey Maggette like played.
Yeah. And the way that his headband would always become crooked after every drive.
So maybe I'll run some of those numbers and see how he's doing in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Because it is. I think that as much as people hate the Warriors, I do think that people, I guess people are fickle or changeable in the sense that people end up just rooting for whoever wins.
Yeah.
I mean, people hated Kevin Durant, and people still hate Kevin Durant, but a lot fewer people hate him after he won a championship.
Yeah.
And people, same with LeBron, like winning, you know, hitting these shots and winning these series, like there's a certain of like, feeling of like, oh well, you know, he did it. I sort of am going to root for him. So I think that I still think that's going to happen with the Warriors if they do well in this series. And I think there's a potential on a national stage in really high profile games against a very skilled team like the Warriors. there's a high potential for James Harden to generate a lot of hate in the series.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I feel that.
There's a high potential for, you know, it already happened in the previous series where, like, you know, isolated plays got, like, streamable clipped and, like, get passed around as, like, you know, Dante Exum fouled the ball with his face kind of plays, which then the NBA came out and said, like, that's a good foul call. Which, yeah, if you watch that play,
it's like, you cannot foul the ball with your face. That's actually illegal.
The NBA's reasoning actually kind of made sense. I actually thought that the play just looked so bad from their point of view. But like, if there's going to be like probably four plays like that in this series of Harden clamping down an arm or something like that. I'd be curious to see how Harden's foul calls go against like Clay, against players that have reputations for being good defenders.
Yeah.
Because I do think that plays into it. You know, Draymond and Andre do a lot of swiping at the ball. And they do get a lot of, like, no calls that are like, I believe you as a great defender got that ball cleanly.
Yeah.
And they do get it cleanly a lot, but sometimes they don't. And I feel like sometimes the refs just sort of swallow their whistles because they're like, oh, that's Andre. He's, like, great at that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that. So we're coming to the end of the episode, and we gotta do our bit. We gotta give some farewells to the teams that we've lost in the second round.
Things we're gonna miss and not miss.
Yes, yeah. So I think the first team I want to go with is the Pelicans. What are you gonna miss about the Pelicans? Give me one thing.
I am going to miss Anthony Davis.
Yeah,
I thought he. I think he is still, like, ascendant. And I can't imagine why. There's no way they're ever trading him.
No, I just don't see that.
Yeah. I just think he's, like, an exciting player to watch. I'm excited about I'm excited about the new players that are exciting to watch. By the way, how is he, like, 24?
Something like that. He's very young.
Yeah, that's crazy. No, so I'll miss Anthony Davis. What will you not miss about the New Orleans Pelicans?
I'm not going to miss how dead it feels in a New Orleans Pelicans game at home.
Well,
right? It feels to me like those crowds were very pro-Warriors, very, very quiet, and it feels like New Orleans does not care about the Pelicans.
Well, what we may need to do is next season maybe make a New Orleans trip. Where they, if they have like two games on a weekend,
yeah,
splurge for front row seats.
Great. And we'll because cheer our face off
because I don't think it will cost that much.
They're not the tickets. So I have actually, I've been to the Smoothie King Center twice in my life. And it can feel real dead in there. I was actually there for the David West return game when he came back with the Pacers that year. And then I went last year and I watched the Pelicans play. I forget who they played, but
I bet if we do something like when the like Pistons, the Blake Griffin Pistons are in town, I bet that's an easy ticket to get.
Yeah. Yes. All right. And hey, we can work our connects. You know, we'll have something. We'll know somebody down there.
We'll know somebody from the Detroit long form improv scene.
Perfect.
What are you going to miss about the Toronto Raptors?
I'm going to miss hope. I'm going to miss hope. But I mean, seriously, though, I think I'm going to miss their bench unit. It felt really cool to have a bench unit like theirs that felt like it could take a game over. I really liked watching Siakam and Poeltl and Van Vliet. OG Anunoby, who just, it was so sad watching him try to guard LeBron this year in the playoffs. Mm. But yeah, I'm going to miss their bench unit. I think good things are going to happen for them in the future. And even though I don't have any hope, I hope that they'll be better.
I will not miss Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
He seems like a good man. I think, you know, just time for a change.
Okay.
Who's next?
All right. Tell me how you feel. What are you going to miss about the Philadelphia 76ers?
Uh, Well, I think they're going to miss J.J. Redick because I think he's gone.
Peace.
You should do what you're going to miss because I don't know. I don't love that team.
Okay. Then I'm going to turn my what I don't miss into what I miss because all I have is what I am not going to miss. I'm going to miss being mad at Dario Saric every time he complains all the fucking time. I mean, even he had a really, really good game in game five. Every single time he was or anybody near him or, you know, maybe anything happened, he complained. He complained all the time. I think that it's very annoying to watch somebody complain all the time. Like, mm-hmm. you complain every once in a while. Everybody complains. You know, things don't go your way.
This is why you hate Chris Paul.
I think so. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I am going to miss being angry and upset at Dario Saric.
I am not going to miss hearing about the process. I'm looking forward to a little break from hearing about it.
Okay.
Who
do you trust?
That I will just caution people that think that teams just like steadily and incrementally get better and better until they become championship contenders, because that just doesn't happen. Like the idea that I'm not saying they can't do that, but this idea that there's a linear thing of like we sucked on purpose, we tanked, we get these guys, and it's inevitable that we are going to be in the finals next year or 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. There's year after year of examples of that not happening,
yeah.
of teams looking really ready, even the Pacers, looking really ready, like we cracked the code. Can't wait till next year when we really, you know, take it to the next level. And it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, that's why these coaches that are able to maintain, like there's an instinct to say like Phil Jackson and Steve Kerr are not good coaches because of the talent that they have. Mm-hmm. But the ability to get that performance and to not let the psychological elements of it wreck a team's performance from 1 year to the next, I think is really underrated. And I think that like often the coach that can get you from, you know, Nate McMillan might not be the coach to get the Pacers from where they are to the next level.
Yeah.
I certainly don't necessarily think Brett Brown is that coach.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I will not miss talking about the process because I think there's just this, the process discussion has this inevitability sense to it because they have to make the finals. Otherwise the whole thing is bullshit. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like they acknowledge and essentially the
it's
that
not
they tanked.
It's not specifically that they have to make the finals. It's that that's what they've set for themselves.
Yeah.
Right. They've set that as this is the end game here, and we're so smart that we're going to make it happen.
Right.
It's mostly that they are so sure of themselves that it's hard to, like, it's good to watch them fail because, you know, how dare you?
Yeah. And even on an individual level, the assumption that Ben Simmons will add a jump shot to his game is an assumption. Like, it may not happen. And he had a great season, but like, so did Michael Carter Williams.
Yeah.
Michael Carter Williams' rookie season is great. Like, look at his stats. So he probably will add a jumper. Like, Lonzo will probably improve his jumper, you know, but like, there's a thing of like, that might be all they are. They might be more refined versions of themselves or that might be all they are for 7 years. And then in year eight, when they're with a different team, they become a different player because of something that happened to them, you know? So
yeah.
Anyway, I will not miss talking about the process. Cool. Who do we have left?
We've got the, I think, cause we talked about, we have we talked about the Toronto
Jazz.
Raptors? Oh, the Jazz. You're right. The Jazz. Okay. What are you going to miss about the Jazz?
I'm going to miss Joe Ingles.
Joey Ingles.
Love him.
Yeah. Get your jingle on.
I love jingle bells. I just love somebody who's, I love chirpy players and, Australian Southern Hemisphere people in general are chirpy. I will say, as
Great.
Someone who has played rugby against, really more specifically Australians more than New Zealanders.
Okay.
New Zealanders who are extremely intimidating to play rugby against, like where you're like genuinely fearful for your life as they in any situation, whether you have the ball or don't, it's very scary to play against Kiwis. But Australians do not stop talking shit ever in a game, ever. Like, I remember receiving a kickoff at the beginning of a rugby game. Not that I was the one. It's just that the kickoffs in rugby games are more tactical, so they don't go, like, long distance necessarily. And I remember getting shit-talked as I was catching the ball, as I was being tackled, and as I fumbled the ball away. And then getting shit-talked as people were running away from me chasing the ball. Like, it was like, you're not going to catch that. We're about to tackle you. You didn't really focus, did you? You dropped the ball. All right, see you later. It was like a series of, like, an entire conversation.
And that feels more like a description than shit talk, but I do understand that they were probably doing real good shit talk.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, and I feel like Ingles carries that tradition on with a pretty killer three-point shot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure we'll be rooting for Paul George very soon. But, you know, his chippiness with Paul George was enjoyable to me.
It was. It definitely was.
So, yeah, I'm going to miss him.
Great.
What are you not going to miss?
I am not going to miss. I think what I'm not going to miss about the Jazz is that they are, as a team, they were so reliant on Donovan Mitchell to get things going.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like I'm not going to miss having to worry if he's going to take over or not. Because it's gone now, and I'm not going to miss that because I think he'll just be able to take over now. I think he has the experience to, like, really become a star in the league. And I think I'm excited for what he can do in the future. But this year's version, it felt like he's doing great, but something's going to happen. And, you know, I think now I don't have to have that worry anymore.
And the Utah Jazz, who had a great season, again, another season that was kind of like, you know, found money. I know one thing that they will not miss, and that's Gordon Hayward. You know, I mean, a great season for them because, like, they were basically in, you know, a state of grief losing Gordon Hayward. And I don't think they had high expectations for Donovan Mitchell at the start of the season, maybe after Summer League or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, that's pretty great to suddenly find a superstar, you know, or a star, I guess, potential superstar.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree. Like, that's a lot of pressure to put on a rookie. You know, some rookies stand up to that pressure. Some rookies just score 1 point in a playoff game.
Oh, oof.
All right. So we got, you know, conference finals starting Sunday and Monday.
Yeah.
So we'll check in sometime next week.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll probably get an early recording next week and get it out to y'all.
Awesome, man.
Taka, you got any more Game of Thrones parody musical you want to plug? What's going on? How's it looking?
We are opening May 18th, which is a awesome week from today. It's looking good. Basically, the show's looking really good, and now we've got to, like, in terms of the acting and the singing and all that stuff, all the personnel things, and now we've got to add the tech elements.
Yes. Of course.
Hey, do you have the access to the Rule of Threes Gmail in front of you?
I certainly do. Let me just
look that up because somebody wrote to me and I don't have that email in front of me. Somebody wrote to us.
I don't have access to the actual login. Let me
tell you the password on the air. And then everyone can log in.
No, I remember the password. Let me check.
Okay, you look that up while I talk about Thrones. So we are going to be adding technical elements, which is costumes, lights, sound. It's interesting, like, I'm producing it basically by myself, and so I'm learning a lot about, like, I'm learning mostly about, like, why production companies are more than one person. And it's funny because there are At the Orlando Fringe, there's a lot of local acts, and a lot of the local acts are, you know, local artists and actors and writers that want to, you know, take advantage of this pretty great theater festival that's in their town to, you know, get a venue and put on a show. And there's one that's rehearsing across the hall from us that is a musical that's a parody of The Room, and they have a huge cast and they have a huge production staff. Like, 'cause I looked at their show description and it was like all their credits for everybody. It's like, here's the director, producer, stage manager, assistant stage manager, lighting designer, costume designer. And they're like, the number of people that they have on their cast and crew is, their cast is probably like 2.5 times bigger than ours. And their crew is whatever 25 is more than what I have, which is like 1.5. Like, it's amazing. Like, arguably our show is a, more like, we've done the show in other places, and like, it's,
yeah,
our show has the appearance of being a, like a more professional show, but like, it's mostly just me and offloading to like freelancers here and there to do a couple of things of like costumes and stuff like that. So it was just like, whoa, they've committed a lot more manpower to their team than I have. But I'm also putting all the money up for it. So, you know, that's probably a very, I feel like it's a very Chinese thing to do, to be like, you know, don't split up the pot. Like, you know, like, do all the work yourself. That way you get all the money at the end or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It was just interesting to see like different philosophies about it. You got the email?
I do. I want to give a shout out because Stefan has been emailing us. My buddy Stefan. He has a question for us.
Okay.
He says, what currently active NBA players have the biggest discrepancy between skill and physical gifts both ways? Not physically gifted, but incredibly skilled, but physically gifted, but would get booted from the league if he were less physically skilled.
Well, so
like,
I mean,
like, I think Jeff Green comes to mind as somebody who is incredibly gifted and his skill is not always there.
Yeah, I was going to say DeAndre.
Ah, DeAndre. So like, it's funny because there's so many things about skill that are hard to define, right? Yes. Like, it's a skill for DeAndre to be able to, you know, grab the basketball in the air and throw it straight through the bottom of the hoop. But like, if you're talking about shooting, yeah, like, he doesn't have the skill to shoot the basketball.
And there is a misconception, I think, that happened like back in the day of John Stockton.
Yeah.
In your Steve Nash's, John Stockton was often considered a, like, he's not physically talented, but look at how skilled he is, which I think played into a lot of profiling about white and black players.
Yeah, definitely.
Because John Stockton was insanely physically gifted in that apparently like his hands were gigantic.
Yeah.
And Steve Nash, if you watch Steve Nash like play soccer, it's like he's extremely physically gifted. His brother's like a professional soccer player. But they might be gifted in things of like coordination.
Yeah.
But I think the
people that I'm thinking about are like the people who are just 3-point shooters, like Wayne Ellington. Like, I don't know if Wayne Ellington is particularly like gifted, but he's like very skilled at his ability to shoot 3-pointers. Like,
I would
like,
say I would put Jody Meeks in that category.
Jody Meeks, yeah, definitely.
But another person I would say is not physically gifted, but very talented. I tend to think of under the rim players. So I would say your Paul Millsaps.
Yeah.
I'd say he's very skilled, and I would think it's hard to say, except for the fact that he can really bully people. I kind of think Julius Randle is not supremely, like, he's not above the rim gifted.
I think is fair. I think that's a fair thing.
You know, like Larry Nance is clearly physically gifted.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Literally like chin on the rim, like his dad gifted.
Yeah. He's just up there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of somebody who else is physically gifted, but not skilled. Somebody.
Thon Maker?
I mean, yeah. And I think he's starting to put it together.
You know what? Like, it'd be great if we could find somebody like that. That's a point guard.
Yeah.
I don't know who that would be.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess is Ben Simmons that guy? But he's not. It's just the shooting, right? Because the rest of his game is so talented. He's so skilled.
Oh, by the way, I also want to say...
That's a tough one.
Before I do want to think about that further. Thank you for that email, Stefan. I do want to say, to answer a question from last week, when I was like, you were saying, like, Kobe, you think Kobe respects LeBron at a certain level.
Yes.
I think his response this week is evidence on my side.
Oh.
Did you see what he said?
I didn't.
He was like, someone asked him, like, how do you stop LeBron? He's like, well, to stop LeBron, you just stop letting go left. If you look at all his game winners over the last whatever, they're all going to his left.
Got it.
And the fact that it was such a just blunt, like, I just wouldn't do this. It didn't have the air of like, you know what? He's one of the greats. Great players are just going to do what they're going to do. You can't stop him. You know, it wasn't that at all. It was just you just shut him down by doing this. So I think that's more along the lines of Kobe not particularly seeing him as like on the level of like a Jordan. But
perfect.
But well, Stefan, send us another challenge for next week.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's all I got.
Hey, great. Good luck on the rest of your Orlando trip, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. We'll talk to you guys next week, and have a great weekend.